Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the Woody Overton Window, the WOW, episode number 34 for Monday, October 7th. Mike Agovino here with Woody Overton. Happy Monday, Woody.
Happy Monday. Monday fun day, right? Best week ever starts now. And happy Monday to everybody out there listening to us. And we're going to continue with the Nittany Lions series, right?
You know, you have a great Monday attitude. You have one of the greatest Monday attitudes of anybody I've ever known. I mean, it's so hard to be motivated on Mondays, especially for me in the fall, because I'm coming off a Giants loss every Monday.
but
has this been a lifelong thing with you? Mondays that you just find the energy?
Roll out and just try to make the best of every day. But I always like to say best week ever starts now, right? And hopefully that's true.
So. I know you do, and I know you mean it because you do it every week.
Yep.
And there's a lesson in there for all of us.
A little positivity.
Yep. Well, if you remember last week, we spent the episode talking about the former FBI director, Louis Free, who gets hired by the Penn State board to do a quote-unquote independent study to determine that the board is innocent and the board should be exonerated for the firing of all of the administrators because the evidence is there that there was a cover-up, according to Louis Free. So we now are fast-forwarding. So all of that happened in July. So again, going backward, June of 2012, Sandusky trial, Sandusky convicted. July of 2012, literally 3 weeks after the conviction, Louis Free comes out with the Free report and exonerates the Penn State Board of Trustees for having fired Paterno and Spanier and Schultz and Curley, and explicitly declares the cover-up real, and that these guys were protecting the football program and they had a culture of corruption, right? So Ziegler is at a distance to the story really until the fall of that year, the fall of 2012, when he makes his first trip to State College. And he ends up hooking up with former Penn State and Pittsburgh Steeler player Franco Harris. And Franco's story is really interesting with Joe Paterno, because apparently Franco didn't have the greatest reputation with Joe while he was at Penn State. But later, after he graduates and he's playing in the NFL, he's understanding why Joe did the things that he did and why he was so tough on Franco, and how much it helped guide his career to use the principles that Paterno had preached. And remember, this is the program there, 95% of the players graduating. Yeah, it was school first and everything else second. And we're not talking about the era of, you know, 8-figure contracts for NFL players.
Right. He was turning young men into real men.
Exactly. And that was his reputation. And that's why Penn State, before this whole thing, was one of only two programs, Stanford being the other one, that had never received an NCAA violation. I mean, the program, by all accounts, was pristine and did it the right way. So Franco tells the story of confronting Mike McQueary at Joe Paterno's funeral. So Paterno dies of cancer in early 2012, in January of 2012. McQueary goes to the funeral. Franco is at the funeral. Franco corners McQueary at the funeral and says, I need to know what you saw. I need to know what you told Joe you saw. And McQueary is tongue-tied. He really can't say anything. He makes an excuse that you know, Joe is so religious and so straight that there were things he just couldn't say to Joe because it's Joe. So he basically tries to defend the positions he's taken, that he did see something, that it was sexual in nature, and that he couldn't really communicate that to Joe. So what Franco walks away with is Joe was never told of any kind of sexual assault. And Joe's reputation, along with the other administrators, has been destroyed by first the story and then the free report and the guy who is the source of the quote unquote evidence of the cover up, McQuarrie, is telling Franco that he didn't tell Joe that he saw anything sexual. And so Franco begins leading this group that does these presentations across the state called Upon Further Review. And so they would just go to areas across the state where there are a concentration of Penn State alums. They would take out a hotel conference room and have a couple hundred people, maybe more sometimes, come in and they would make their presentation. And so Franco is executing a grassroots program trying to resuscitate the reputation of Paterno. And that's really where he and Ziegler get to know each other and form this partnership. And that's how they are moving forward as we get to the end of 2012 and into 2013. And 2013 ends up being, you know, the year where Ziegler really gets into this case in a big way. But remember, he gets into it in a big way from the perspective of not believing the cover-up story and from the perspective of trying to understand whether that's true or not and whether a Paterno, Spanier, et cetera, were really capable of this. And the further he gets in, the more he's convinced that there was no cover-up. And there was no cover-up because there was no crime in the Mike McQuarrie incident, that he didn't see anything sexual, because if he did see something sexual, there were a number of things that he would have done, could have done, should have done that he didn't do, starting with stopping it, confronting Sandusky, going to the police, any of those things. He goes to his father and his father's friend, Dr. Dranov, and those guys are mandatory reporters. Their advice is not for him to go to the police. Their advice is for him to tell Joe Paterno, which by definition means they haven't told him about any sex crime yet.
I want to interrupt you real quick because I just had a thought. That makes McQuarrie the ultimate bitch if he saw Sandusky raping a kid and he didn't stop it. It makes him the ultimate bitch, right? I mean, like, what kind of pussy-ass motherfucker are you if you see a young child getting raped and you don't do anything about it? I'm talking about like physically go in there and beat that ass.
Absolutely. That's why. So he signed up to be a hero, not to be a bitch. Right. When the police confronted him, it was that the police were sure that Sandusky was abusing kids, that they had heard the rumors about him seeing something in the shower. And Ziegler calls this the Loch Ness monster theory, that, you know, you see something, you're not quite sure what it is, but then you hear that there really is a Loch Ness monster. And so that thing you saw must also have been the monster. And so, you know, that's probably the most benign view of what McQuarrie did. But McQuarrie's story changed so many times. But from what we know McQuarrie's actions were on the front end, he clearly was weirded out by the fact that he sees Sandusky coming out of the shower. He hears the slapping sounds in the shower, and Sandusky's there with a 14-year-old. They said in the presentment that he was 10, maybe as young as 8, but he was actually 14 at the time. And so, you know, he's going along because he thinks he's helping the police get a bad guy. And then they take and twist what he has said into the wording of the presentment, which is that he witnessed Sandusky having anal sex with a 10-year-old boy in a Penn State shower. Well, he then becomes the bitch because the public starts asking the question that You just asked, why would the 6'4", 230-pound Division I college quarterback, tough guy, not do something to confront the guy if this is what he's seen? And that causes him to send an email, a series of emails, to Janelle Eschbach saying, I'm paraphrasing here, but you're mischaracterizing what I said. I did not see sex. I did not see penetration of any sort. And he tells her that he is going to hold a press conference because now he's into self-preservation mode. His reputation is being destroyed. People are seeing him as that bitch, and he needs to speak up and say that that's not what he said. She responds, again, paraphrased, you can't do that. That will destroy our case, right? Franco Harris cares about the program. He cares about the reputation of Joe Paterno. He knows this isn't true. He hears it right from the horse's mouth, right from McQuarrie's mouth at Paterno's funeral, that it isn't true, that he couldn't and didn't tell Paterno he saw a sex act. And Franco's on this mission, and Franco and Ziegler unite over the desire to clear the administrators of the cover-up accusations. And Zig then gets the jailhouse interview with Sandusky. And over the next series of months, he becomes, well, he sort of doubts what his assumptions were going in, because the deeper he gets into this thing, more and more and more of the things Sandusky is telling him turn out to be true. And he's unable to find anything that Sandusky has said to him that doesn't seem to check out. And so he's torn, and he's really beginning to believe that maybe this entire thing is bullshit. And Sandusky just got, it was the collateral damage in the railroading of the administrators, right? So in this episode, you know, we really focus on the story of Matt Sandusky and what happens with him, and why it's so key toward understanding the case, right? So the Sanduskys couldn't have kids of their own. They had adopted, I believe, 5 kids over time, but they had fostered many others over time. And none of those fosters, none of those adopted kids had ever accused Jerry Sandusky of abuse. Matt came from a very difficult circumstance. He grew up in a trailer park with his mother and his brother. The second mile had, you know, given him an opportunity. He had blown it twice by getting in trouble with police, one time for burning down a barn, later on for stealing computers at Penn State. At each turn, the Sanduskys had basically come to his rescue. At 16, they took him in as a foster. CYS allowed them to do that, and it kept Matt out of juvie because of this was tied to the arson at the barn.
Hey, y'all. One thing I've learned in 16 years of being with my wife is that PMS and menopause are a very real deal. Thank goodness for Hormone Harmony. Hey, do you experience cravings or bloating? Do you feel a little bit down or off? Do you struggle to find comfort in your body? Do you experience bad sleep quality? Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony supports hormonal balance and regulation. It relieves symptoms of menopause, supports cortisol, estrogen, and progesterone levels, promotes healthy weight loss, and curbs carb cravings. It improves sleep quality, reduces occasional bloating and gas, and it relieves hot flashes, and it relieves mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through premenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So hormone harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and the occasional bloating and gas, or no desire to be intimate with someone, if you know what I mean. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar, is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, my wife says, is feeling like herself again. And that's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RLRC at checkout. That's HAPPYMAMMOTH.com and use the code RLRC for 15% off today. Hey, y'all. You want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with the subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to become curious and empowers them to choose how to learn. Look, we homeschool our son. No doubt about it. He's more of a visual learner, and we use IXL, and Cindy teaches him, and there are so many different benefits to the program. It adapts to exactly what he needs in different areas. So IXL is the perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum. IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational games, lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving. Everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead like our son, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. Kids love IXL's positive feedback awards and educational games. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. And don't forget, Real Life Real Crime listeners get 20% off. Y'all, we really do use this product, and it's been a godsend.
And he has trouble living as a foster in the house, exposes himself to one of the female fosters, and the Sanduskies are close to throwing him out, but then he's able to turn things around by adopting him. So Matt asks the Sanduskies to officially adopt him at age 17, and the reason that he does, well, I mean, the biggest reason that he does, is if he is a Sandusky, then his tuition is one quarter the price of normal Penn State tuition. And so the Sanduskies agree to adopt him. When you hear Matt Sandusky, adopted son of Jerry and Dottie, as people were hearing in the news at the time, you think naturally, okay, they adopt him at birth, they adopt him at 3 years old, 4 years old, something like that. You don't think this is someone they adopted at age 17, age 18, but that's what they did. Matt does get his act together for a while until he and his brother, steal the the computers at Penn State, but Matt is as ardent a supporter of Jerry as there is. After Jerry's last game, he coaches his last game in 1999, Sports Illustrated did this huge cover story about Sandusky and really about the second mile and everything that he has accomplished with the second mile and, you know, the kind of coach he was, the way he treated his players. I mean, it's a huge celebration of who he was. And inside of that incredibly flattering article in Sports Illustrated, Matt Sandusky is quoted numerous times. Just, if it wasn't for Jerry and Dottie, I don't know where I'd be. This family taught me, you know, they brought me to church. They taught me the value of sitting down as a family at dinner every night. They put clothes on my back. They taught me respect. They challenged me to do well in school. He just lays it on really, really thick in the Sports Illustrated. He, all the way through the first days of Sandusky's trial, he is on the Sandusky side. He is supporting family. He is saying that Jerry never could have done this. He is sitting literally with Dottie at the first day of the trial. Jerry informs Matt that Alan Myers, the boy in the shower, victim number two, has flipped, essentially, and that Alan is not going to testify for the defense. He is becoming an accuser. He is claiming that he was abused. And Myers was the second mile member closest to Matt. And so when that happens, Matt is evaluating what the heck he's going to do. He joined Family Sandusky because it was his meal ticket. And now he's looking at a situation where it looks like Jerry's going to go to prison. The guy he thought was going to be the guy that kept Jerry from going to prison and exposed what the truth was, Alan Myers, has turned ship and is now on the other side. And so in the middle of the trial, Matt changes his stance. He goes to police and claims that he was a victim. And this gets exposed because of NBC News gets a tip from someone. We later learn that, in all likelihood, Joe Amendola says this, that it was his co-counsel that gave the tip to NBC, because he was, imagine, these people are all in one location. You've got all these media people. Apparently, his second chair was flirting with some of these NBC folks and, you know, gave up the goods about Matt to those people. And so NBC leaks the story. That's the reason that Amendola decides not to put Jerry on the stand at his trial, because now his quote unquote adopted son has accused him of abuse, and sort of the last straw on the trial. But following all of this in 2013, Matt goes out and begins a speaking tour. He's in a movie called Happy Valley, which is, knowing what you know about this story now, I think you would be incredibly entertained by watching Happy Valley and the way that they present stuff here. But I wanted to say, I think at this point in time, where Ziegler is and where Franco Harris is in late 2012 and early 2013, is where Woody Overton is right now on this story, where your bullshit detector saw through the cover-up thing. The evidence that you've seen is enough for you to know that entire cover-up story was bullshit, that none of those administrators were covering up for Sandusky in any kind of way. And now it's, okay, there's a lot of really crazy shit going on here. But where does it end? How deep does it actually go? Does it end with the cover-up stuff? Or is there a chance that the entire thing is actually bullshit and Sandusky actually didn't abuse anyone? So Ziegler is stuck. And in this episode, he breaks down at a point It's really kind of incredible while we were recording to watch the range of emotions with John, because John is a hard man. I mean, he is a, he's not everybody's cup of tea because of what his makeup is, but you see the truth that is in him. You see the true journalist that lies within him, because he is compelled to move forward with this thing, even though it's destroying his life. He's being threatened. His family's being threatened. He's not getting paid by anyone. And he's being driven by a desire to know the truth and a feeling that he's sort of alone. He's sort of the only person he sees that is capable of uncovering the truth, because he's the only person interested in the truth who doesn't have a bias in finding that truth, because he has no allegiance to Penn State. There's no one that he's out to defend or protect. He just wants to know what the truth is. And at this point, he has seen enough to be certain that the truth is that Free was full of shit. The board knew nothing that the public didn't know. They took everything from media reports. They acted hastily. They fired these four men with pristine reputations on nothing more than the media reports and fear of the media descending on State College in a panic. It was obvious that the board paid $7 million to get themselves exonerated. And so now he is in this thing, and he is very certain that Matt Sandusky is full of shit. And he thinks that perhaps the last way to blow this thing up is to blow it up with Matt. And so Matt is going on this speaking tour. Ironically, he's not speaking in State College. He's on the fringes, going to places in Maryland and Ohio and surrounding Pennsylvania, but not doing a lot of these sessions in Pennsylvania. But he does schedule one in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And so the movie's come out. Matt has done an interview with Oprah Winfrey, which is another thing people should listen to. So obvious listening to that interview that Oprah thinks he's full of shit, that just listening to how Matt handles it, there's not a lot of credibility you can put in what he says. But, you know, Zig knows that this guy's a fraud, and he is, as only Zig can do, he is torturing this guy. So Matt Sandusky plans this this appearance at a school in the Allentown, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania area. Zig flies all the way across the country. He goes and buys a ticket online. He's using his real name. The tickets are free to this thing. There's nothing. He's not hiding anything. All he's done is bought a ticket to attend this thing. Now, his intent is, when there's Q&A at the end of whatever Matt is presenting, that he is going to, you know, he is going to challenge him, take him on, and hopefully expose some of his lies. But incredibly, he gets there. They don't want to let him in at first. They know who he is. They're prepared for him. There are police at the door. The police decide to let him in after he promises to be on, quote unquote, his best behavior. He goes to the front row where the person putting on the event tells him he's okay to sit. The police then come to him and say, no, you can't sit here, and escort him to a seat near the back of the auditorium. And then the police come back to him and say, you can't be here. You need to leave. And he says, I know my rights. I bought a ticket to the event. The ticket's in my name. On what grounds are you asking me to leave? The cops get physical with him. We've got video, multiple videos of what goes on here, but they literally drag him out of the seat outside and take him outside. They rough him up a bit. They cuff him and they arrest him. And they come up with a stack of charges that they say, you know, it's like 18, 19 years worth of time he could do if he was convicted of all of these things they charge him with. And all he's done is bought a ticket and gone into the theater, the arena, whatever you want to call it, and waited for Matt Sandusky to begin speaking. But Matt is so afraid of encountering Ziegler and what Ziegler is going to say that he refuses to come out and do what he's supposed to do until they can get Ziegler out of there. So they do this to Zieg, and he is in a lockup all night. They finally release him. He tells the story of driving back across the state and getting to play Oakmont, which is a very special, one of the premier places in the country to play golf. It's got those famous church pew bunkers on the 18th hole. I had the pleasure of playing it once. It's a beautiful place. But he's the only thing keeping Zieg going is the golfer in Zieg that's getting to play Oakmont, because this entire Matt Sandusky thing has been a disaster. And he breaks down when ultimately he's playing with Bob Capretto, who's the former Penn State player and board of trustee member, who is the member at Oakmont, but Franco shows up there that night to meet with him, and that's really where he breaks down over the support that Franco gave to him. And so this Matt Sandusky thing and exposing Matt Sandusky was sort of the last thing that Zieg saw as a way of potentially opening this thing up and getting people to really take a look. And once again, he's disappointed by Dottie, who couldn't find it within herself to, when put on the stand at trial, to call the accusers liars. Dottie, who is so torn by her religious beliefs and has just in multiple venues been unable to perform, including the Today Show, when Zieg is able to secure Matt Lauer taking the trip to Pennsylvania to interview her. She's unable again to in a direct way anyway, call them liars and address the reason why these guys would be lying. And so this is where things go. And Zieg is once again left sort of holding the bag, where he doesn't get to expose Matt. Dottie doesn't come to his rescue, even though she was at the event and saw what happened. This then chronologically leads into his whole face-off, if you will, with Scott Paterno, where he's now got Alan Myers' name. He wants to expose Alan Myers on the Today Show. Scott is saying, don't do that. Scott's big investigator, the Criminal Minds guy, is telling him to please not do that. He doesn't do it, and so the appearance is a dud. And so at every turn, this thing has just failed. And, you know, he uses the term despondent. He is just beaten down and beaten up. He's battling this thing from every angle he can possibly battle it from, and he is just getting beaten down.
Yeah, I didn't know he got arrested. I didn't know all that. All that stuff. And, you know, and obviously, I guess when you plead to whatever he pled to, whatever small thing, then you can't come back and sue, because then you're saying you had something bad to do with it, whatever happened that you pled to. But I understand pleading the shit to make him want to go away, a misdemeanor and what have you. So this does further enhance why I see he's so passionate about this case.
It really is fascinating. You know, I think 99%+ of human beings would, confronted with everything he's been confronted with here, would have thrown in the towel and said, I can't keep this pursuit up. I can't keep giving more to this. My family is in jeopardy. I'm on the verge of, you know, some kind of collapse. I mean, I really think he got to the point mentally where he saw this case for what it was, and at every turn, something big and powerful and stronger than him blocked him from exposing the truth. The truth just couldn't find a way to break through, and he couldn't find a way to stop fighting for it. You know, I've done that whole series with him, and I've done this Depth of Journalism series with him. And he is, this is who he is. And it grinds on some people for sure, but the country needs more people like John Ziegler. I mean, this guy literally doesn't care about anything but the truth. And he doesn't care where the truth falls on some political line or anything else. He is the definition of a journalist and what a journalist was supposed to be and used to be. And he literally is unemployable other than through a guy like Mike Heck, you know, who doesn't give a shit and just wants the truth out there too. He's really an incredible guy who's inspired me in a number of ways because his resilience is just, it's incredible. And so we're now at the point where there's no hope of exposing this thing through any of these victims, through the conventional methods that he has tried to use to expose them. The trolling, if you will, of Matt just becomes another in a series of painful incidents for John. And he's left really wondering, what the hell does he do? Where does he go from here? And next episode, we are going to open up the individual settlements. We're going to open up what the victim, what the accuser told Penn State. And in every one of these cases, they told Penn State something different than they had originally told the police, something different than they had told the courtroom in June. And it becomes very, very clear that each of those stories were told in the way that they were told to maximize the value of a settlement, because venues change, the severity of the crimes change, all of these things in order to get a check written. The board member, Ira Lubert, is a major venture capital private equity guy in the state of Pennsylvania, still very active today, is the person who is tasked with settling each of these cases, not just with the quote unquote 10 that are part of Sandusky's trial, but there are now, between the trial and we're in 2013, 2014, the number gets up to 36. There are 36 individuals who are paid some form of compensation, some settlement from Penn State. And some of these stories that they pay off on are just unbelievable. We're gonna look at those. We're also going to look at a guy by the name of A.J. Dillon, who I mentioned last episode. We call A.J. our undercover agent, our superhero in the series, because A.J. Dillon reaches out to John Ziegler. He explains to John Ziegler that he's a former member of the Second Mile, that Jerry played a huge role in his life, that he knows that there's no chance that Jerry Sandusky abused a kid, and that he's going to use his position to attempt to prove it. And so AJ goes about making a false claim that he was abused by Sandusky, and goes about seeing Andrew Shubin, the state college attorney who represented more of these victims than anybody else. And he exposes how the sausage got made with these victims, because he goes to Shubin with one story. Shubin changes his story so that it moves it into the vein where Penn State is paying big money. So AJ's story doesn't actually happen on campus. Shubin moves it onto campus. Is one level of supposed abuse. Shubin makes it a different layer. Shubin introduces AJ to his therapist. He goes through months and months of therapy. In fact, I think it's over a year of therapy. And at times, he is having to snap himself out of this repressed memory therapy that they're pulling things out of him that aren't in there. And he's feeling how it all went on. He is able to get Lubert, the one who is writing the checks to these victims, to take a recorded interview with him. He understands, Lubert understands that he is being recorded in this interview, and the things that Lubert owns up to in that interview are pretty amazing, because he knows that a lot, he doesn't say maybe all, but he says, you know, a lot of the people coming forward are not telling the truth, but that there are real victims too.
Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Mochi. Mochi is a telehealth platform that connects patients seeking medication-based weight loss treatment with board-certified doctors and dietitians to help them determine the best treatment options to accomplish that goal. Mochi's program is completely virtual, meaning you can access their services anywhere in the United States, and you will be meeting with their team online. You deserve doctors that listen. Mochi is dedicated to providing holistic, patient-centered care that prioritizes overall well-being with the goal of transforming how weight management is approached. Mochi Health takes a holistic approach to weight loss that includes visit with board-certified doctors, nutrition consultations, and medications delivered to your door. Science-backed medications including GLP-1s like Ozempic and generic compound versions, affordable and accessible, regardless of insurance coverage. With Mochi, their dietitians work hand-in-hand with your medication to create personalized nutrition plans that fit your lifestyle. Reach your weight loss goals with science-backed, FDA-approved GLP-1 medications and support from real doctors and guidance from registered dietitians, and help with making easy and sustainable changes to achieve results. Y'all have seen this. My wife has done it. My brother-in-law has done it. One of my best friends is doing it, and it really is an amazing process that works. So get started at joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off. That's joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off, and let Mochi help change your life. Hey, y'all, changing my wardrobe from summer to fall? Hey, it's never easy. Luckily, Quince offers timeless and high-quality items I adore, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh and I don't blow my budget. And there's nothing easier than going to Quince and choosing these high-quality items, like cashmere sweaters from $50, pants for every occasion, washable silk tops, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, and I love that. Look, I got the stainless steel Link Apple Watch band for $59.90, and it's heavy duty, it's awesome, and it's like $100 less than I could find anywhere else. And I also got a 100% organic cotton fisherman quarter zip up sweater. The color is alabaster. Man, I can't wait to wear that dude out this fall. And Cindy got the Mongolian cashmere boat neck sweater and heather gray. And I'm telling you, these are classic pieces at a fraction of the price. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/RLRC for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/RLRC to get free shipping and 365 day returns. quince.com/RLRC. You'll thank me later.
And this is the thing we see over and over and over again in this case, is that because the numbers mount, and now we're no longer talking about 10. Now we're talking about 36. That when you hear those kinds of numbers, it's just impossible to contemplate that it couldn't be true. How could there be 36 people coming forward and all 36 not be telling the truth? And it only Ziegler could isolate each of them one at a time and look at the perverse incentives that exist across this thing, where, you know, prosecutors have a certain motivation, the board of trustees has a certain motivation, the lawyers have a certain motivation, the therapists have a certain motivation, the judge has a certain motivation, and all of those things align in this perfect storm to where 36 easily, it could have been 100, because all you had to do was come forward, show that you were part of Second Mile, so it became plausible. You're in his charity, so you're at his events, so you could know him, because no dates are ever given for things that can be checked out and confirmed. It's really easy to come in and make a claim. Some of these, one of them that we're going to hear about next week from an alleged victim, dates all the way back to the 70s. This is a guy who has changed his automobile so that his automobile looks like Jack Lambert. His car is a drivable Jack Lambert. He is a Pittsburgh Steeler freak and a Penn State freak. And his story is that he's abused in the 1970s by Sandusky. And he has this crazy story of how Joe Paterno supposedly takes him to lunch and bribes him not to come forward with the accusation against Sandusky. And that story is leaked to our favorite local reporter, Sarah Ganim, and it becomes the story that stops all the progress toward basically reestablishing Paterno's reputation and getting past the cover-up, because there is a bunch of grassroots momentum through 13 and 14, not on behalf of Sandusky, but on behalf of Spanier and Paterno and Schultz and Curley. And it's looking like Penn State is going to go all the way and Paterno's statue is going to go back up. And maybe this is going to be, you know, Paterno Field at Beaver Stadium and all the things that it should be given who the man was. But then this wacky 70s accuser comes forward and all of those efforts stall, even though it's as obvious as any that it's bullshit. And so we're gonna from here go through those accusers. We're gonna talk about the media, and then three more of these, and we're done. In the end, we'll circle back to the perfect storm. And I want to, with your help, review all of the appeal stuff by using that Justa, whatever help we can get from the Justa and other resources that I've got, so we can tell people everything that has happened on the appeal side. And
yeah, you know, it's really interesting. They're having their first good year and however long. And I actually took them every week. But you know what? You never hear anything about Paterno. You know, so the payoff did that part. And that's really what I'm not saying on Sandusky. I'm talking about the rest of them. Okay. By writing those checks, ultimately, it's like I don't know what you would equate it to. Like in the long run, they knew it was going to pay off because they'd be back making their $1 billion a year in college football. Whereas before, nobody wanted to fuck with a school that was associated with a pedophile or having covered up for a pedophile. So yeah, they're Happy Valley is happy again, right?
And, you know, having gone to Vanderbilt, and James Franklin coached at Vanderbilt for a number of years before he went to Penn State, it hurts that much more for me to see. And, you know, more and more people are getting old and dying off, and folks that know the truth and could expose the truth are becoming smaller and smaller in numbers. And I don't know if.
But, you know, on the flip side of that, I found too, in a lot of cases, more the years go by, some people will actually feel guilty for having lied, right? Because now their parents or grandparents or whatever, and they're older and they have a different view on things. So maybe somebody will do that lied will come forward and tell the truth.
Well, and Dottie and Jerry thought that that would be Matt. Because number one, he's only paid $325,000. So of all of these victims that get payouts, I don't know if that's the smallest one. I think it might be. If it's not, it's one of the smallest ones.
He got a lot less than that because the lawyer is getting 40%.
Exactly. Right. So
he got $165,000 or something.
Right. So he turns on the only people that ever loved him. And here's an amazing thing. So he has kids, Matt Sandusky, but he's divorced. And when Sandusky is arrested and he's then bailed out and put on house arrest, Matt Sandusky goes to court to get a special court order to allow his kids to visit their grandfather, Jerry Sandusky, at his home. Now, if this guy has abused you, because you're going to come out months later and you're going to claim that this guy abused you. If this guy had abused you, are you going to go to court to get the right to have your kids be able to visit him while he's on house arrest? I mean, come on.
World's full of dumbasses. Sorry.
Well, they thought him and they thought obviously Alan Myers would be the other one who at a point would not be able to take this anymore and would come clean. Now, of course, he got paid a lot more money. And, you know, we covered some episodes back, the investigator who gets to his door and his place, he's got this front of a trucking business that isn't actually a trucking business because, like many other of these victims, they have to have a way of showing how they've earned a living because nobody knows their quote unquote Sandusky victims and knows how they got their money. But Jerry thought that Alan would break down in that one appeal and not be able to testify against him. And that's when he said 30 something times that he didn't remember. He didn't remember the picture at the wedding and everything else. And so, you know, to this day, none of them have broken and there's no sign that any of them are about to break.
We will see, and we'll do just the thing in the appeals too. That would be interesting.
So we'll break up those last three episodes as the settlements, the media, and the perfect storm together, and then we'll look at the appeals in that last one. So three more to go.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, dude. Thank you so much.
And well, thank you for your open mind. I mean, I feel like you came into this knowing the story. For the most part, the way the public knew it, but with an investigator's intellect and mindset on the thing, and I think as we've gotten deeper and deeper into it, you've seen some things that maybe you've seen before, maybe you haven't seen it at this kind of a level that I think have you. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that have you scratching your head a little bit about what really happened here.
Yes, obviously a certain portion of it is bullshit. And I have seen it happen before in the Catholic Church thing. And when people come out of the woodworks, you were talking about not having specific dates and shit like that. And some people you just know are full of shit, but they, guess what? They wrote them a check to shut them up, to make it get it, you know, to lessen the impact in the media and all that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, and this fucking, you know, the guy in the shower and the guy with dementia, there's a lot of it, you know, is obviously bullshit.
But. Yeah. Well, I got somebody here before we go. Hey, AJ. So I got AJ Benzo with me in Florida this week. Come on over here. Why don't you say hi to Woody Overton? You're talking to Woody Overton.
What is that?
Yeah. So I don't know. Get your head in.
Hey, what's up, Woody?
Tons about you, brother. How are you?
I can't hear him, but it's finally good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too.
Enjoy your show, brother.
So,
yeah, you enjoy Florida. Y'all don't drink too much.
AJ, we're talking about the episode. So I wrote all of these beginnings, and I don't know if you remember the beginning of this episode, but I wrote a song to the Brady Bunch theme, tooling on Matt Sandusky whole time through the song. And I'd send that to AJ. Yeah. Hey, AJ, this is what I want to do for the opening for episode 11. And he'd be like, what? You want me to sing a stupid Brady Bunch song about Matt Sandusky? Yes, I want you to sing a stupid Brady Bunch song about Matt Sandusky. Yes. You don't remember it? I'm going to play it for you in a minute. God. But yeah, we're working on some things, a couple of new shows out here this week that we're having some fun with. And I haven't seen AJ face to face in a long time. So it's great to be hanging out.
Y'all have a great time and don't hurt yourselves.
We're going to go to a private game reserve and shoot some 500-pound sheep or something.
You're not do that. You can just do it from your computer. Yeah. Pay $30,000 for that.
All right, man. Love you. Thanks for everything. Have a great week.
Have a good weekend.
Aglets.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.